This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to Smirch Pod Royale, a podcast celebrating all the Bond and Bond-related films by those who enjoy, hate, or, you know, just aren't asked about them. Hosted by me, John Rain. This week we'll be heading back to a galaxy far, far away and try to undo everything someone else did in the worst possible way. Yes, it's Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker. And somehow, Tom Crowley has returned.
No, I'm not.
Yay! No, you're not.
No, I'm not. There we go. Just to re-establish that. And to all the listeners, just go back, listen to all the new Star Wars film trilogy with me and John Rain. Otherwise, most of the things we talk about, like little nude pink men running around, won't make any sense.
I've got some notes about the little nude pink men later on.
Good, good. I had a thought about them as well. Excellent. Yeah. So look forward to that, listener. This is going to absolutely go off.
Oh, it's going to be mesmeric. John Mesmeric, the Elephant Man, he was very good.
John Mesmeric. Yeah. He was the hypnotist elephant man. Oh, I think we've just thought of a new addition to the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I think we have, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant.
You
call Alan Moore.
My eyes, not around my eyes. Stop looking at my head.
And that's a good point to shout out to R.I.P. Kevin O'Neill, illustrator of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, one of the greatest comics artists ever produced in the United Kingdom. Mm. Gone but not forgotten. Miss you, big man.
Yeah, no, he was great. Big part of our shared childhoods, I'd imagine.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely so. Nemesis the Warlock and all of that, yeah.
Yeah. And he never had the gumption to draw John Mesmeric.
No, he never did. He somehow, in a cowardly fashion, claimed that was tasteless. I don't understand how.
I don't know what's wrong with him.
No. Yeah. Mind you, Eddie Campbell did then draw John Merrick in From Hell, but that's a different story.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a good novella.
From Hell, I think, might be the best comic.
Yeah.
It's hard to think of one that, like, genuinely challenges it. But anyway, but we're not here to talk about From Hell. A really good thing that's just all the good all the way through. Mm. We're here to talk about The Rise of Skywalker, which is different.
As you can tell, people who've been listening to this podcast long enough will realise that I tend to go off on tangents when I don't really want to talk about the film.
Yeah.
As we just did there. But we're going to get back on track because we're greeted with the opening crawl that says, "The dead speak."
Yep.
And then it goes, Palpatine's back. What?
Yeah, the most important plot point, arguably, is just thrown away in the opening titles. I was thinking about this, and like there is a balance to that, right? Because from the very first movie, really seismic important events are explained in the title crawl. Mm. But when you've just gone, You know, Emperor Snoke and like Rey's parentage and Kylo Ren's redemption and all those other things we've been talking about all this time. Well, don't worry too much about that. The main thing is we got a Drive Time radio show from Emperor Palpatine.
This one goes out to Anita, who's going out tonight in Stoke. Have fun, Anita. Here's Rita Ora.
And they're going, oh no, Palpatine's back and he's playing some absolute stinkers. And yeah, and so they go, oh no, bloody Palpatine's back with his Drive Time show, and now we don't know what's going on.
Ugh, the opening crawl should be, because you do read them, but in this one, you're just like, this is fucking nonsense. From
you read it, it's the opposite of what it's meant to do, where you go, oh, I wonder what's going to happen, and then you go, what? Oh. You're disappointed before the film starts.
It should be one of those things, like, you know when they get like a million billion photos and they make a picture out of their photos? It should be that when you look at the crawl from front to end, it makes a picture of Rian Johnson being punched in the face or something.
I thought you were going to say just a hand extending a middle finger.
Yeah, well, basically it is that.
So,
as you say, old Palps is doing a Drive Time show.
Old Polpo, yeah.
Yeah.
I will not play that shit on my show. You ain't seen nothing
now,
yet.
Graham says he's ringing in to say that his dog sadly passed away, his little dog Skippy. Now, what? Can someone warn me about this, please? I've come out of an upbeat number into a death dedication. A little dog named Skippy.
So Palpatine is Simon Bates.
Yeah, that's right.
Hear some foul language, like something like cunt.
The chain, and then into the next number.
Yep. All right. He's now turned into Alan Thingy.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Oh, I don't know.
Yep.
Partridge.
No.
Alan Partridge.
Anyway, so Kylo is. We open with Kylo Ren killing mushroom people.
Yep. That's fine. I like the little mushroom people. I think, didn't see more of them, actually.
I think it's important to make a note of Kylo Ren's war crimes up to this point, because the very first film he kills Han Solo, which is up there, isn't it? That's like...
That's basically like the ultimate Star Wars crime.
That's like kicking... David Attenborough pauses to pick up a contact lens at the top of a high flight of stairs.
Yeah.
That's like booting him down it when he's dead. Like he goes full exorcist tumble and then going, I'm a nice guy, really.
Well, exactly. And then, like, going in the garden, burning some plastic, gathering all the plastic in David Attenborough's house and then burning it in the garden and saying, hey, I'm an okay dude.
Mm. And then at the end, expect everyone to go, it's fine.
Yeah, he's fine. I mean, I've got some thoughts on that for later in the film.
Yeah.
Would you like to hear my sort of summary of the Star Wars trilogy?
I misheard what you said. I thought you said, I've got some thoughts on that for later. Like, he's just
I've got some thoughts on that for later. That cocksucker Kylo Ren.
Sorry, yes. What were you going to say?
Well, I came up with a theory, which hopefully doesn't give too much away about what remains to come in this podcast. But The Force Awakens, this is what it is. This is my summary. The Force Awakens resurrected some beloved characters in imperfect but well-intentioned ways and brought in some new young leads to make the case for more Star Wars. Mm. With arguably a fair degree of success. Mm-hmm. The Last Jedi messed with the formula, played with the toy box of old and new characters to try to make something new, and was both loved and hated for it.
Mm.
The Rise of Skywalker takes both the old beloved characters and the new characters, who in the long run, given time, proved not to be all that interesting or enjoyable, and then solemnly takes them all into the woods and shoots them in the head.
Yeah, that is essentially it. I couldn't agree more.
There you go. That's my summary.
Mm.
Goodbye. Thanks so much. Listen to Crowley Time. This has been wonderful. Thanks, John, for having me.
I think my metaphor for this film is, do you know those things at the when you're at like the pier and it's like an arcade?
Yeah.
It's like a little thing where you put two pennies in and it shoves two pennies at you. This film constantly throwing things at you that are of no interest or value.
Oh, my God. I mean, again, that's my main note for most of it, really. Like, who's this? Why do I care? What's that? Oh, my God. The average shot length, like scene length of this film, is about 7 seconds.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it'll inevitably be someone coming in and saying something. But because they know, you know, they've read Joseph Campbell and know about like emotional investment and character arcs, the other character will have like an almost totally manufactured emotional reaction to that. Like, what? Or, oh, thank God it's you, or whatever. And then the scene will end. Like, someone comes in with some expositional information, another person will respond with some sort of emotional line, whether that feels earned or not, and then it'll be the next scene where the same thing will then happen again.
Also, this film looks like shit.
Now, that's interesting. I don't know if I agree with that. I really enjoyed bits of it. I think I don't think that it's very well directed in terms of, certainly not in terms of storytelling. Like, having seen Last Jedi not that long ago, the sort of moment-to-moment storytelling is so strong, and I think that's something Rian Johnson's great at.
Yeah.
And in this, I mean, again, I think it's just because I imagine the first cut of this film was 5 hours long, and they've just had to somehow get it down to a lean 2.5 hours.
Well, also, he had, like, 6 months to do it.
Right, did he? Oh, so yeah, that was
he took over from Colin Trevorrow, who was fired. Yeah.
Oh, now this is another important thing about this film.
Hmm.
It's been teased in previous Star Wars Smirches that you know a bit about the Colin Trevorrow script, and we were going to save that till I've now seen Rise of Skywalker.
Yes.
Well, John, I've seen it. I was disappointed. Tell me about Colin Trevorrow.
Well, it would have ultimately been bad because Colin Trevorrow, I think, largely is bad.
Mm.
But the idea was more of... it was more fully formed. It was Kylo Ren was going off to see basically like the bad Yoda, so like a big fat Spider-Man who is like not Spider-Man, isn't the Marvel hero. Although they're both owned by Disney, so it could have been him.
True,
but he was basically going to have his Yoda scenes from Empire Strikes Back, but with a bad Yoda.
So do his training, which again was mentioned in a previous film and never happened.
Yeah, but the whole time he's doing it, he's being haunted by Luke's ghost. So that's quite interesting, a sort of Hamlet-esque thing.
That's a lot more interesting than having Rey be attached to Luke's ghost. Having Luke there to taunt him is really nice. That's a nice idea.
Yeah, and Rey was going to be very close to the other Resistance people, and she would be wearing Luke's suit from Return of the Jedi, essentially like this black suit, and her big staff that she has in the first two films is now like a double-ended lightsaber-type deal. And
like Darth Maul, yeah.
Like Darth Maul. And there's also this undercurrent of Resistance becoming more of a wider thing, so a bit like in the Andor series that's just been on.
Right.
There's a growing sense of galaxy rebellion, and there's a whole sequence in it that I've seen storyboarded where they were doing the First Order. We're doing like
how could you make that mistake?
Oh,
they're completely different entities.
They're doing executions with these like lightsaber guillotines.
Oh,
and then in the end, there's this storyboard I've seen where Finn is leading X stormtroopers, an idea they borrowed for this film.
Yep.
Against the First Order, but
they didn't really. They don't really do that.
No,
they expose it in some dialogue, and then Finn has an emotional reaction line, and then the scene changes.
But it's more of a kind of they've got old scout troopers from the old films, and have got, you know, it's more of a proper rebellion thing, fighting in the streets and stuff. And I think
there's something so interesting about that as well, where it would be. We talked about this in Force Awakens. It would be so much more interesting to say, well, I mean, we're getting well ahead of ourselves here, but like at the end, they magic up a sort of resistance because they go, oh, that's an unresolved sort of theme of the movies, isn't it? Shit, we better do that last minute. And it would have been so much more interesting to focus more on the idea that turning the troopers against the Empire is such a key bit of overthrowing it, right? It would be so much more interesting if you had some of those like 5 bajillion, so many millions of squillions of Star Destroyers just like start turning against each other because they really, you know, because they've been, you know, maybe slowly over time, you know, some of the rebel ranks have started to infect the other platoons of stormtroopers, something like that. That'd be really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, what I'd have done is I'd have gone back and I'd have watched like the last episode of World at War.
Yes.
Which is, let's be honest, that's the only episode we all watch because that's when it all starts falling apart. And just sort of copy some of the narratives from how the World War II ended and things like that, and just make it this sort of, you know, this thing is collapsing from within, and go with that. But then this, they've just, let's get into it because...
Palpatine in his bunker.
Palpatine is in his bunker.
How has this been allowed to happen? The bloody Jedi have come back. I blame all of you and not myself.
Doing
a live
reworking of the Downfall parody.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, at least that would be interesting.
Mm. But he is basically hiding in a bunker, being held up by a big pole, and he tells them, I am every voice.
Finger.
Yeah, I have been every voice inside your head. And he talks like James Earl Jones. And then we see, I just think it's hilarious that we see this big tube full of dead Snokes.
Yeah, it's great. And if you look closely, I think you can see a Ripley in there as well.
Oh, of course,
the spent Ripley. Yeah.
The one that's like half a whale.
Yeah, kill me. Yeah.
I don't want to be in this film.
Why would you put me in this shit film? Yeah.
I'd like to know what was wrong with those Snokes. If they like came out perfect and then were like, they talk like, I don't know,
they just were a drag.
Yeah.
Like who?
Joe Pasquale.
Joe Pasquale. Yeah. The Sith will rise again. And it's like, oh, this isn't very menacing.
Bullet in the head.
That one's gone. Get the one that sounds like Andy Serkis, he'll do.
Yeah. Andy, Billy thingy circus. Billy Smart Circus.
Billy Smart Circus. Yeah. Like Bill Nye the Science Guy. Get the one that sounds like Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yeah. So
he's
yeah,
compelling. He's
so,
compelling.
So he is. So Palpatine said, you know, basically, I've been here all the time, even though no one's mentioned me, and I died at the end of Return of the Jedi.
You might not think I've been set up, but no, honestly, I have.
You might think that I've just been brought in because no one was happy with how Rian Johnson had left the story narratively, but here I am.
And then, given the opportunity to totally reinvent the third film, J.J. Abrams had no ideas.
No, he basically just checked Reddit and was like, oh, I'll read that thread of all those blokes who wanted to crowdfund remaking Episode 8 to something they wanted it to be.
Yeah, and they'll just, and he's going to take the idea of me coming back. But he didn't, that's not what happened. This was planned from the beginning.
Because when the first trailer came out, I was mildly interested. And then at the end, you had Palpatine laughing. And I thought, oh, it's probably going to be like a hologram or something.
Or Sith Force ghost. Sith I mean, Force actually, ghost. If you're doing, you know, Sith training, having Palpatine's Force ghost, you know, maybe a red ghost, that would
yeah,
be cool.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Turning up, yeah, would might look quite pink, actually, if it's semi-translucent.
I was gonna say a pink
that's
one,
even funkier, yeah.
Because he's been put in the wash with a white sock.
Yeah.
Stop making fun of me.
He does gain a lovely red velvet pyjama top later in the movie, so that's thematically accurate.
Don't know where that comes from.
No, it's part of the magic life energy. Gives you a very saucy sort of evening gown as well as restoring your body.
I mean, I remember well watching this in the cinema. This bit, I'm thinking already, oh, fucking hell. Yeah. And then he says, and here's the final order. And he unleashes these ships that have been hiding under the ice.
Or like just sunk. It looked like they just came out of the ocean, right? I mean,
and I was literally at that point, I was thinking, shall I just leave? Because this isn't going to go well, is it? I mean,
well, it doesn't bode well, does it? No. And also, like, it's that strange thing of like going, right, so this in the opening crawl, here's what this film's about now. What? Sorry, what about all that other stuff from before?
Yeah.
Don't worry about that. And then the opening sort of basically mute, you know, almost silent opening titles, you know, the first few minutes. They're just there to tell you, no, you thought this is where this was going, but here's where everybody is now and what they're up to, and here's Kylo Ren going to find Palpatine. And it's very disorientating. I found it very disorientating.
Yeah.
Because like, I just kept being introduced to either, you know, very old characters like Palpatine or like new characters, you know, or sort of old characters that have already come back, like Leia, and just being shown them in different places, but not being told why they're there or like what the stakes are for them currently, because you leave on such a sort of defined moment of like this last straggly kind of band of resistance at the end of Last Jedi.
Yes.
And like whatever your beefs with Last Jedi, like there's nothing wrong with that as a place to sort of leave them.
No.
You know, emboldened but diminished in number. And then start from that point, like what would be wrong with that? Even if you do want to do this crap of why would you, but if you did want to bring back Palpatine, you can still do that and show us how we've got to where we are. But it just feels like it feels like you've missed a few episodes in the middle of the series and gone, what? Where are we?
Yes, and I'm pretty sure that Trevorrow's script had Kylo Ren as the proper supreme leader.
Yeah.
And there wasn't an emperor or anything like that.
Yeah.
So why they've done this, I don't know. Because I think Star Wars fans are so programmed to think, well, there's a Darth Vader and there's an emperor. That's the way it works.
Yeah.
But as you say, he leaves the Last Jedi with, here's a new direction. And we've just done a complete U-turn on it. It's like bloody Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng.
It's like bloody Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng made this film. You know?
Imagine if they did. It actually is, though. I mean, it's
Our budget for Rise of Skywalker is 40 squillion pounds.
Well, Kathleen Kennedy's in the office. She's like, Liz, that's kind of bankrupted the entire company. And, you know, this is the most powerful media entity on the planet. And now it's completely bankrupt. She says, I am offering my resignation as leader of the Disney Corporation.
Oh. Okay.
That's my scene. That's how I imagine it going.
That's
anyway.
Great. I'm just trying to think who they'd get to replace her. Like maybe bloody Rishi Sunak.
Who's a big Star Wars fan, it turns out, because apparently he's never understood those films.
Oh, well, there you go then. Yeah. Mm.
Rishi Sunak, he likes Coca-Cola and Star Wars, and those are the two things that he pretends make up a personality.
Oh, and football now as well, because the World Cup's on.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, I bloody love it when someone does a goal kick with a football.
Wow.
Wow. Imagine.
Three lions on my nightshirt.
I love Star Wars. It's my favourite of all the films. God, it's such a sad, brave, tragic ending when that nice old man in the robe gets thrown down that pit. He just wanted to bring a sense of order to the galaxy. And, God, these bloody upstarts with their food banks come in and throw him down a big pit. Tragedy. I love Star Wars, I do.
Well, thanks for that, Rishi.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So Palpatine says to Kylo, you've got to go and kill the scavenger, meaning Rey. And then he says, and also, she's not who she thinks she is. Bum, bum, bum.
Another disappointing plot twist.
I need to get into that later because there's a revelation later on that makes no sense.
Okay.
And I can't wait to get there. So, Poe Dameron and Finn
are... Not boyfriends.
Not boyfriends. They don't even like each other that much. They definitely are. What the fuck?
They are. It would be so much better if they
were. I remember them
as well.
Teasing this film saying, there's going to be a gay kiss in this film.
Yeah. And you go, like, ooh. Yeah.
And it's two ladies right in the background where you can't even see them.
One of them's the one with the brilliant face who's been in all of these so far. And the other one is, I think, a character we've never seen. So
never
that's
seen.
Not... well, also, I
She's
mean, I was going to wait till
Lesbo.
Then to get...
So nice.
Lesby Avenue, that's her name.
Ah, perfect.
That's her Star Wars name. I was going to wait till then to get to this. But, I mean, what better example of this sort of... ostensibly progressive era of like Disney filmmaking and like franchise, super franchise exploitation than a lesbian kiss that is so heavily trailed in the West, but so completely unimportant that they can remove it for the Chinese market,
exactly.
Which they then did. It just to demonstrate that they have absolutely no moral fortitude at all.
No. I mean,
anyway.
Going back to the John Boyega being made very small on the Chinese posters for The Force
Yeah,
Awakens.
God, it was taken off, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, no, I think he was either taken off or made like so small you couldn't really see him properly.
He's basically a silhouette, yeah.
Yeah.
Like the silhouettes of Luke and Darth Vader fighting on The Empire Strikes Back.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's John Boyega. Where?
Yeah.
That guy in the back. You see that little speck there between those two stars? That's actually John Boyega.
I mean, he might as well be in this film. He has nothing to do.
No, they even introduce a whole new character just to give him something to do, and he doesn't do anything.
He's like in Grain Chill when a beloved character goes to sixth form and you're like, I'm not interested in him anymore. the writers are like, he can be at start a radio station or something. I don't care about him anymore.
No, exactly. Well, they made a better decision in Press Gang where they, you know, for the fourth series, they decided, and a third series, they went, well, they will have all left school now, so we'll just have them be running it as a commercial enterprise.
There you go.
And you go, good. Better than just losing Linda Day and Spike and all our friends.
No, that would have been terrible.
If they'd just all gone, yeah, I mean, you just have Tiddler. And she's good, but she's not going to carry the whole show, is she?
Oh, absolutely not. Well, one of Press Gang has just been an Andor, of course.
Oh, really? Who's in... is it Colin?
Not Colin, the other one.
Oh, yeah, Kenny.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. His name is Lee Ross.
Guess him, yeah.
Lee Ross, he's great. Oh, no, mate, genuinely, I mean, I've said this before on these podcasts so many times, and I worry I'm a complete drag, but I've lost so much interest in anything vaguely Star Wars related now. Same as Marvel movies, just couldn't give a shit, really.
I was the same, and I watched the first three episodes of Andor, and I was like, oh, fucking hell, that was boring. And then it just suddenly clicks, and then it's like, gripping.
Oh, okay. But now that, but mostly the knowledge that Kenny's in it, makes me want to watch it.
Yeah. And it's got Stellan Skarsgård, who is wonderful.
Mm.
But we're doing it again. We're not talking about the film.
Sorry, getting moved. Talking about a more interesting Star Wars product, even.
Yeah, so Poe and Finn get deliverance from a cow... Get intelligence from a cowman.
Yeah, from a cow, like the cowman.
Win
the
war for us,
mate. Yeah.
Yeah. And they learn that Palpatine is on Exegol from this intelligence, because there's a spy... in the First Order, giving them information.
Well, he says something like, isn't it Poe Dameron says something like, the Emperor and his fleet have been hiding in the unknown regions on a world called Testicle, I think, is what he says.
Well, he says the best line in all of Star Wars ever. In fact, any film.
Yeah.
I imagine J.J. Abrams and Chris Terrio, who wrote this film, were sitting around going, how are we going to get the Resistance to find out? Well, they could get information from a spy. Great. But how are we going to relay that information? And then Terrio goes, I'm imagining it's Terrio, because he's shit. Yep. What if one character goes, somehow... Palpatine has returned.
Yeah, this was something which my oldest friend, Toby Wilson, animation writer, shout out to Toby Wilson, said when he saw it, he said, the most telling moment in the entire film is when a character, you know, Oscar Isaac's eyes are dead, as he says it as well, as if he knows how bad it is.
Yeah.
And he just goes, somehow Palpatine returns.
And no one at that point goes, how?
Yeah, no.
Or speculates. Maybe he was hiding. And everyone just goes, okay.
Or even goes, who?
Yeah, it's been 40 years.
Yeah, it's been ages. And, like, he also was quite a shadowy figure. I mean, he was called the Emperor, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you
mm-hmm.
don't get the impression that he was on banners
no.
going, join the Empire, become a stormtrooper, Emperor Palpatine salutes you. Darth Vader was the public face, right?
Oh, of course.
And he had a cooler face. Palpatine looked like a
Emperor
sort of
ain't selling no
peach.
Fucking lunchboxes, is he?
No, exactly. Mm. You're not going to buy... Oh, this is my Supreme Leader Snoke lunchbox.
Yeah, put it away.
It's got a man with a fucked up face.
I don't want to look at it. Put it away.
Put it away. Spunk.
I mean, the way he says somehow Palpatine is returned, he might as well be saying somehow Leo Sayer is number one. Everyone's just like, don't care.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, and we get the lad from Lord of the Rings. He's now in this. Dominic Monaghan, whatever he's called.
Somehow Jive Bunny returned.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, Dominic Monaghan's in it as well. Yeah, was he a hobbit?
He was a hobbit, but he's been brought into this film to stand in front of Rose as much as possible, so of all the
just
blokes
to obscure
Hayek
her slightly.
Her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's about three or four new unnecessary characters that are just there to sort of obscure Rose Tico,
like the big penis man.
Big penis man, he's there. Dominic Monaghan, he has his lesbian kiss with the big penis man at the end. I think
he sits on top of him and goes up and down.
Yeah, that's right, which is kissing in that world.
It's kissing in the penis man's world.
Rubbing his balls on his forehead balls or whatever. That's kissing in that culture. He's from that planet. He's adopted.
He's adopted
by a
yeah.
penis family, and now that's his oldest friend.
I think he's called Claude as well, the penis man.
Claude?
Claude the penis.
Okay, here's his bin bongo, and here's aberrant boofer, and there's Claude.
Claude, yeah, he's a distant relative of Wicked Willy.
And that guy that looks like sort of Satan, but with an eagle's wings and an elephant's trunk. What's his name? Steve. Right. Okay. This is welcome to Star Wars. This is Steve.
Is he on our side or is he on their side? Why'd you say
doesn't
that?
Doesn't matter in this film, really. He just like wait and see. Really,
looks like a devil.
He looks like the devil. Well, I mean, you know, who knows in this film? Could be anything. Is he a traitor? Sure, why not?
Probably.
Has he turned good again? Yeah.
Does it matter?
Do I care? No, I don't.
No, not at all.
Yeah. There's a bit where they're jumping, you know, between... There's also a lot of... I mean, God. This
cross-talking.
Film's... What?
Cross-talking.
Oh, yeah, no. Mm. There's... Of all this film's sort of cardinal sins, I think the worst is messing with the basic rules of Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
In a way that just sort of spoils things, or it opens too many questions that then essentially mean you can't ever do Star Wars in the same way again. Like, for example, hyper jumping onto planets, like, and you go, you'd be pulped.
Yeah,
you know, the idea that you can sort of laser focus, like, come out of hyperspace exactly about 40 feet off of a planet, you go, they can't. I mean, like, there's a sense of like weight and rules to these things. Like, you know, the reason that the holder maneuver thing works, more on that later, is because it's dangerous, and you know that, you know, these things are sort of almost unpredictable, and, you know, these engines are, you know, they only work like our engines. They've got limitations and rules. But Oscar Isaac like jumps through Dune like he's on a little bike skipping over stones. Like, there's no limitations or rules anymore.
Also, there's quite a few scenes in the original trilogy in the Millennium Falcon itself where they're like, we have to put this through the Nava computer, otherwise we'll come out into a star and get destroyed. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll materialise halfway through a planet and get crushed or whatever.
Yeah, it's bobbins.
Yeah, rubbish.
But at least Claude's there.
Somehow Palpatine returns.
Somehow Claude...
Our favourite character
in this
Claude
film.
Is there. Yeah, yeah, Claude is there. Somehow Claude is here.
They
now.
Should have had him on all the posters.
I wish Claude was sort of... What I'd love is if they kept referring to Claude like he's actually the best dude ever in the Resistance, and you never see him do anything. But you get like, oh, Claude, this guy one-handedly like took down an entire interior Imperial platoon on Jakku. Did you see it? It was incredible. And like in the background of loads of shots, you see Claude like painted like a Soviet poster as an emblem of the Resistance. And the lunchboxes as well. Everyone's got their Claude lunchbox.
Everyone's first Claude question wristwatch. Is, how is Claude?
How's Claude doing? Yeah. Claude, man, he's the hero we all need,
Palpatine's
but not
like,
the hero we deserve.
You must kill the scavenger and Claude.
Yeah, I tell you what, get rid of Claude while you're at it. That guy's really a thorn in my side. This feels like the plot of a Star Wars spin-off video game between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens.
Yeah,
I thought, and that's a note that I made, because it's like the idea that you're dealing with this old sort of half-formed returned villain. Yeah, it feels like you're playing Star Wars Dark Forces or something, and like they've got a kind of semi-Palpatine as the villain, and you go, it's a good enough plot for that, because you go, great, it means I can sort of relive Star Wars adventures. But for the conclusion of the Skywalker saga, as it's now known, it's just completely weak. It's so half-assed. And Palpatine's such a boring shit character in this film.
Yeah, he is.
He's so uninteresting.
Mm. He just sits in a cave.
Anyway, sorry. He does, sits in a cave, and then says, go on, kill me, that's what I want. Mm. And then he goes, no, actually, no, I don't want you to kill me. And then she kills him, and he goes, oh, no, I've been killed. The end.
Yeah.
Spoilers. Anyway, that's the film over. Thanks, John.
No worries.
Lovely talking to you. Yeah. Have a great... Make sure to put the Crowley Time plug in there, would you?
Because I've got 2 pages about Claude.
No, okay. Well, we'll get through the Claude stuff, and
Claude,
then we'll
Claude, a Star
we'll
Wars
a
story, my new series on Disney+. Plus.
Oh, please. Mm. I'd love that. Only if you wrote it, though.
And when Claude
Han
gets
Solo
excited...
turns up and his
I'd have it
explode.
That when... Yeah, exactly. And when Claude gets excited, just a little spunky bloop, bloop out of his head. Just goes on the wall.
Yep. Okay, so we've around this point, we've met the Minion's Nan again. Maz Kanata, little pickled Minion.
Oh, God.
Rose Tico turns up and says, who wants a cup of coffee? And then someone like shoves her out of a doorway and says...
Dominic Monaghan
never
walks
that,
in front
idiot.
Of her and is like, hey, who wants some coffee?
Claude comes in and everyone goes, we love Claude. God, who was that other person talking? I can't remember. Yeah. Claude.
Push her great. Down the stairs.
ow. And they like make Kelly Tran turn up on that day to film that.
I feel really sorry for her in this film, though. She's really done dirty.
It's so awful. I think we should keep going through the film because I think all these things are going to come up later. Mm. And I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves.
No, cool.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than 1 billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So Rey is doing her training with a bits of footage they still had of Princess Leia from The Force Awakens.
Oh, God, deepfake Leia is so, so depressing.
It's
in this.
So horrible. And some of her lines feel out of context because she's obviously talking about something else.
It feels like a cassette boy, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It feels like, you know, like, so you agree that it would be suicide to go to Exegol? Yes. but I'm going anyway. May the Force be with you.
Oh, if only I could stop falling over this robot. Droids are droids. You can fall over them sometimes.
Sometimes you fall over droids. Thanks, Leia. You're welcome. Very sad. And you just...
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's a bit like, you know, I'll forgive the Peter Cushing. Well, no, I won't. Actually, you know what? Fuck them. Fuck all of them.
Yeah.
Because... The Peter Cushing in Rogue One was the most sort of failed part of the film, apart from the failed Princess Leia face at the end, which was worse.
That's terrible.
But like that felt like the first attempt to go, is this okay?
Yeah.
And everyone sort of went, well, I guess. Yeah. And now it's just like they've convinced themselves the technology is perfect. But so that's why you now have to sit through all these scenes of like a wibbly, like slightly misaligned Leia face,
yeah,
like weaving across the screen over some other actor's body. And it looks so wrong. And I've no doubt they've put like NASA level computers on this job.
Mm.
And this is the best week any effects studio can do. And I've no doubt they worked on it and revised it and revised it and revised it. And it still looks terrible, and it still feels so disgusting and disrespectful to do it at all.
Yeah.
It's awful. She's just died. That's the other thing. Peter Cushing died years ago. So bringing him back in a little cameo, you go, fair enough, like it's a tribute to his legacy. But to have this, to sort of, you know, deep fake retcon this person's performance is just like so icky and gross.
It's horrible.
Horrible. Horrific.
And you're writing round it as well, which is just makes the film suffer for it.
It does. It does. Why, you could have, I mean, sad though it is, and it might have meant reshooting, I mean, and if they shot it in 6 months, they wouldn't have had time, but you just go, have Leia die heroically in some, at the start of this film.
Yeah, or have the start of the film be like her funeral. It's like, oh, the Leia died.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot more exciting than Palpatine coming back. But,
and also it gives them a sense of purpose, doesn't it? We'll do this for Leia. Right. I know they try and introduce that later, but it's done so badly. But we have to get there.
Hey, we'll get there.
Yeah. So
World Called Testicle.
Ray's Rose doing
Tico
her
getting
training.
Pushed down the stairs. Yeah, Ray's doing her training, yeah.
They find out from the spy that they need to get to a planet called Exegol. And yeah, Ray remembers in one of the Jedi, secret Jedi texts, that Luke's made a note of the Sith Wayfinder, because J.J. Abrams loves fucking...
Maps, endless maps. I was so excited that there were some more maps, because you love maps, John. Any plot that revolves around finding a map, you are so into that, aren't
honestly,
you, if I remember correctly.
The J.J. Abrams films I can think of is The Force Awakens, where they have to get the map.
Yep.
Then I'm thinking in Mission Impossible 3, there's something called the bunny, the rabbit foot. That he has to get, and this is the Wayfinder. It's like, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, just MacGuffins.
Just stop it.
It's very like template filmmaking, isn't it? It's like, okay, here's my tracing paper, and let's get film structure out and just draw over all those bits with slightly different things. The Wayfinder.
Oh, so Ray, Finn, Poe, Chewbacca, BB-8, and C-3PO go in the Millennium Falcon to a planet called Passana to find a hidden clue.
Passana. And Ray's gap year.
Yeah,
going to a sort of local festival.
Oh, it's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very, it feels like a gap year student doing some, you know, marveling at some adorable natives, isn't it? And it's like, this made me think about, again, sort of trying to handle progressive ideas, but in a kind of corporate American way.
Mm.
And it's like they're going, look at these brave, comical natives.
Mm.
And so much of the film already, like, again, I think until the very end, when I've got a few exceptions to this, every character feels like they've not lived up to any of their potential.
Yeah.
Every single, and you almost want to include Last Jedi in that as well.
Oh,
you
absolutely.
Just go,
yeah.
There's none of them has proved to be particularly exciting.
Mm.
And crucially, the most criminal thing is you don't feel like any of them actually have a relationship or a dynamic. Like Poe and Finn have screen chemistry, but you don't get the feeling they've spent any time together.
No.
They're never reminiscing about, you know, bombing runs they did between movies, or like, oh, and you got me out of that scrape on so-and-so. Yeah, well, you saved my ass in whatever. Like, we're just being told what everyone's relationships are. And the only people I feel like I believe have any sort of an actual dynamic between them as characters are Rey and Kylo Ren and Rey and Luke Skywalker.
Yes, absolutely.
And those two, we've lived in them developing a relationship, and that's why that feels truthful. But the rest of the time, it's just like a guy walks in and someone else says, hey, you're my friend, or hey, I hate you. And you go, sure, I guess. I don't feel anything about these characters. I don't feel like any of them have had recognizable character traits or recognizable relationships, because, you know, they've been so busy establishing lore that they've skipped over actually telling us any stories. And I think Last Jedi is the least bad offender for that. And that's why I believe in Rey and Luke having a relationship and differences of opinion and affection for each other, but not really anyone else. And not even the famous bromance of Finn and Poe. Like, I think one reason it seems like they are boyfriends is because all you get off them is like love at first sight, because you don't see their relationship develop. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And further to that, you actually get a scene here where Rose is like, can I come with you? And they go, no.
No, fuck off. Yeah. Get fucked, mate.
Yeah. All the lads on Reddit don't like you, so you have to stay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. A gaggle of about 200 incels don't like you.
Mm.
So I've decided the best thing to do is to immediately capitulate to their opinions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very clever. Very, very smart.
And talking of which, the next scene, we have Kylo Ren rebuilding his mask that he smashed in the last one.
No, I didn't realize I was repairing my helmet with strawberry fondant, and I don't want any comments made about it, thank you.
And he took it to a chimpanzee.
That's right, I love the chimp blacksmith.
I like the chimp blacksmith, yeah.
The Knights of Ren and all that, fuck that, let's have the chimps of Ren. I'd love that. If Kylo Ren had an army of like a squad of five chimps in like cool armor, that would be fine by me.
Amazing.
That'd be much better. Space chimps.
But you talk about, you know, potential and characters not fulfilling their potential.
Yeah.
Knights of Ren were built up in the first one to be this big deal.
Yeah.
And JJ obviously likes them because Rian Johnson was like, I'm not having that. And they weren't in the last one at all.
Yeah.
JJ brought them in this one and they do nothing.
The thing is, there are things that J.J. Abrams goes back on that Rian Johnson did where he then realises, obviously, like, you know, because I imagine he's writing the script, like, as they're shooting the film because, you know, that's the only way to explain some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And he suddenly goes, oh, actually, that thing that I've retconned out of the movie is quite helpful, actually. I'll write a different thing back in. So now there's an uncomfortable mirror thing, you know, where, okay, we didn't have the Knights of Ren, we had the elite squad of the Imperial Guard or whatever, and I don't want them anymore, so, okay, we'll write the Knights of Ren back in. And there's so much of that, and so many of the things he's brought back going, why did you get rid of that? That was great! It's like he brings them back and immediately realises, oh, they've got no potential whatsoever.
No, they do nothing. And it's annoying because... In the first one, you're like, oh, okay, so this is kind of, I understand his backstory slightly, because I think Lawrence Kasdan had something to do with the first one, you know, a competent writer.
Yeah, it's also good press, right? It's like when John Carpenter kind of, he did the score and he supervised on Halloween, the reboot, and it was really good. I really liked that Halloween movie.
Yeah, because Lawrence Kasdan, what he did in the first one was he walked in the writer's room, turned around and just went, and then walked out.
Wafted it in the room and said, you know, suck on that brilliance.
Thanks for the 10 grand, lads.
Yeah, bye.
Probably more than that, probably 10 million.
Oh, God, yeah, imagine.
Yeah.
It'd be all right by me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd go fart in a writer's room for 10 million pounds.
All right, we'll have a new series of Balls of Steel.
Okay, great.
Where you spend years trying to get into the biggest writing room in England.
I spend years disguising myself as Lawrence Kasdan, studying his movements, the most method performance ever conceived. And then I go into the new Star Wars TV series writer's room. So, hey, it's me, Lawrence Kasdan. Thanks for the 10 million, and off I go.
Yeah. No, you've been eating beans all day yesterday. I understand why now.
I'll be honest, I wasn't researching Lawrence Kasdan. I've just been eating beans for the last 10 years.
And that's why the
Supreme Fruity Bottom Pop that just came out was so absolutely lumptious.
And then it landed on a page and they went, Palpatine's returned.
Genius! Thanks, Lawrence.
Oh, what have I done? What have I done?
I think that's probably what happened.
So, Kylo Ren comes storming in with these Knights of Ren, and as you know, they're the Knights of Ren because they walk past, and one Stormtrooper says to another, "Knights of Ren."
Yeah, because you've forgotten about them. Yeah, exactly.
And he puts down the cowman's head on the table.
Yeah,
goes, "There's a spy among us."
Yep.
And Richard E. Grant, who's now in it, goes, oh, dear.
Do you remember when it was around the time Richard E. Grant was getting into Twitter or Instagram videos?
Mm-hmm.
And I really love him. He seems like a really nice and earnest man.
Yes.
And, like, I love him as an actor as well.
Yeah.
But like he's so earnest. And like around the time that I knew other people who were seeing Rise of Skywalker and saying, mate, this is absolute garbage.
Yeah.
He released a video of him like having just come back from the premiere, sat in his home going, well, I've just been to see the film and... Oh, wow. What an incredible piece of work they've put together.
I remember it well.
I really hope you can see it. Mm. And it is as though he's never seen a science fiction film before.
Yes.
And he's so sort of awestruck, like, wow, there were laser swords and ships in space. Can you imagine such a thing? And you go like, no, it's not good, Richard.
No,
like, you could be in another sci-fi film and it might be really good.
Yeah.
Go for another one.
He's Richard, he's Grant. Just wanted to try that out. I remember he used to do videos and he'd be like, lovely day in the garden. And then he'd just turn to the camera and go, on every video, he'd just do this big laugh. Obviously, not so much these days because he's a very sad man for good reason.
Yeah, well, quite.
Quite. But yeah, I do remember that. I do remember him going, it's like he's been in a Fellini film. I've just been in this extraordinary space
and
adventure.
My goodness. Can you envision such an incredible adventure as this?
The hairy dog man was in a plane.
So moved was I when Greg Grunberg off Heroes got killed, playing the character Boff Trinko. And when Boff bought it in the raid. He just reads as the most easy to impress man in the history of the world.
Well, good for him.
I don't think he's ever seen a sci-fi film before. That's my prediction. He's only ever seen With Nell and I and Shakespeare.
And he directed himself. That is childhood.
Yeah. Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. Yes. Which I want to see, actually.
I have seen it. It's pretty good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's quite
good
fun.
Well, I wish we'd watched that instead of Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Anyway.
And when he was on Shooting Stars and he said he was from Swaziland and they all laughed and said, "You mean Switzerland?"
That's good.
I like that bit.
I also like the bit when there's a lad from Skins on Shooting Stars, and it's like one of those moments when there's a really good gag in the first sort of 2 seconds of a show, and you go, we're all safe here. Mm. We can have a good time. When Bob Mortimer turns to this, I can't remember his name. It's one of those pretty kids off Skins, and he says, "Right, Steve, you're in Skins. I've not seen it. It's about potatoes," and it's just. God, like we're all right. We're going to have a good half hour here. It's the opposite of the opening 5 minutes of The Rise of Skywalker, actually, to bring it back to the theme.
Where you know you're in trouble.
Yeah. You know you're not going to have a good time for the next 3-4 hours or whatever.
We also get another moment here of Kylo Ren displaying a feat of force powers that would be handy at any other point in his career. Where he literally lifts a man off of the table up to the ceiling with the force and says, "We've got to find who the spy is and kill Rey."
Yep.
And I'm like, there's many times in this film that it would have been useful if you did that to somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
But you chose that
inconsistent levels of power.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a bit like, because, loyal Smirsh Pod listeners will know that the Snake Boy posse have listened to many Harry Potter watched many Harry Potter films and talked about them. And the, each of those children has a device in their pocket at all times with the power of, like, both Jesus and a nuclear bomb. Mm. And it makes it very difficult, I think, to sort of keep consistent stakes and all that. Like, any of them knows that they could kill somebody with a thought and two words.
Yes.
And it's difficult to kind of keep a consistent world with manageable levels of power when that is the case. And similarly, this film falls into a... Well, it takes a system that has worked a lot previously and just sort of slightly messes it up.
Well, yeah. I mean, in Return of the Jedi, Luke's like fully formed as a Jedi and he's able to do bits and pieces. But again, with him, there's many times where he could use them.
Yeah, that's true.
But at least he does practically use them. He lifts up C-3PO and all that business. But in this...
And from the Rancor beast and all that, saving himself and all these things. That's all relevant. C-3PO does some translating around this point, I believe, which was nice. I enjoyed that.
Yes, yes. And he speaks to the little natives on Pisana who asks Rey what her name is. And she says to him, "What's your name?" And he says, "What's your family name?" And then Rey goes, "I have no family.
I have no family."
A bit like when Rodney accidentally applies for his own job and says, "No, I haven't got a brother." And of course, Norse fans there.
There's one for the kids.
Yeah. And the little otter people.
Yes, the little otter people. They're around. They're cute. I mean, it is all very... Again, I mean, going back to a thought from earlier, like I was looking at this and, again, a bit like the lesbian kiss that's just of no consequence, but is just, playing to the converted for pats on the back in the West and then immediately cowering and removing it in the East. Like, you just go, there's no substance to it. And what I thought was, like, there's two problems here. One is that all of the cool old characters we used to like have gone, except when Luke comes back later and then things get a bit more fun for a bit. But most of these characters, they're such sort of ciphers, like Rey and Poe and Finn, that like you don't really know what they're like or what their personalities are. You just know what their kind of destiny and what their theme is. And those aren't characters.
No, they're carrying heavy themes, but you don't care about them.
No, exactly, because they haven't got personalities. Mm. And so whereas Han, Luke, Leia, like if you were asked to write a page of dialogue between them, it would be a piece of piss because you know exactly who they are. Mm. And Rey, what would they talk about if the cameras weren't on them? I've no clue. Do you like space chess? Yes, a bit. Okay, like it'd be like that. But similarly, without any of those old characters with more sort of bold character choices and more interesting character personalities, all they can do is stand around gawping at stuff
and talk over each other. Movie.
Yeah.
For comedy purposes.
Oh, yeah, it's all that. Like, at best, you'll get a kind of, well, that just happened, level witticism. But, like, so with this sort of street festival thing, I was comparing it to, like, Indiana Jones in Cairo.
Yes.
And And I was thinking to myself, people like, there's a lot to criticise, you know, and lots of things to unpack about, you know, Indiana Jones and its portrayal of other cultures. But in Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indy turns up, he's got friends in Cairo. It's not his world, you know it isn't. Mm. But he's got a defined relationship with it. He sits down, gets some, you know, grappa in a bar or whatever, and he's eating dates and like playing with this little chimp and stuff. And but he's got a relationship with it, so it makes the place he's in feel alive and real.
Yes.
Whereas this, you know, it does, it feels like somebody, you know, standing in front of some starving kids on their Tinder profile to show how, you know, how compassionate they are. Mm. Like, there's no substance to it. There's no engagement with it emotionally. It's just, I think it's weird that Indiana Jones feels like a more sensitive portrayal of 1930s Cairo.
Until you get to the next one, but we won't talk about that.
Well, we won't talk about Temple of Doom. No, that's a whole separate
And it's a prequel, so that's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. He's moved on since then.
Yeah.
And it's a different country, too.
What Ray should have done here is when the little one's like, what's your family name? She should have kicked her fucking head off.
Yeah, that's right. Just to sort of... And hey... Ray's got so little of a defined personality. I believe she might do that.
And she's a Palpatine, as we find out later. So that's right. It's Will Winner.
I think Poe later on goes, yeah, I suspected there was something wrong when she kicked that adorable baby walrus's head off and it flew across the street festival into a big tuber. And then one of the space walruses went, and then the head flew out again.
I know, as the blood came out of the little pipes of the tuber. And then Ray kept coming up and down.
That's right. And Ray turned and looked at me and looked me dead in the eye and said, I'm glad I did that. That's really funny. I knew there was something wrong.
Really? Because that's when I thought she was all right. So they're on Posada, and then Kylo initiates another force bond with her, which is pretty much Rian Johnson, by doing that clever idea in the last film, has saved this film, because without it, this film's fucked.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's the only way to get out of
things. But then it goes too far.
Yeah, that's true.
It spoils that as well.
Yes, it does.
And Kylo says to Rey, I'm going to find you and I'm going to turn you to the dark side and you're going to show me your face clean as the morning. I know things were bad, but now they're okay. Suddenly Kylo is standing beside you. He does give me orders. He strangles some men.
Oh, I love that
Suddenly
song.
Kylo.
Let's watch Little Shop of Horrors instead.
Oh, man, I wish. I mean, this is... there may be a clue for the listener in how engaged we are with the movie at this point.
I'd like it if Kylo was talking to him. He's like, I know things about you. And oh, what the fuck is that head doing in that tuba?
It appears to be... I think that's really funny.
And Ray says, hey, me too.
Yeah. Hey, we've got loads in common.
Oh, I think maybe she's Palpatine.
Why don't you come round and watch Mrs. Brown's Boys with me?
Oh, I love Mrs. Brown's Boys. I think it's really clever. That's what she says.
Poe's like,
Finn and Poe just looking at each other, tugging their collars. Uh-oh.
So he goes to Pisana to find her. And then we get the hilarious scene of... they fly now.
They fly now, yeah. I mean, J.J. Abrams is like bad half-assed comedy dialogue. It's like sub-Seinfeld now.
Yeah.
You know, listen, I love Seinfeld, but, you know, when you're just going in for the, they fly now, what's the flying? Do you fly? I don't fly. Did you ever fly? Like, when you're at that level, I think
at that point...
You want to take another look at it.
They should say, they fly now, and then Chewbacca puts $10 down because he's just masturbated. They've lost the contest.
That's right. And then Elaine Chewie comes in and says, hello, how are you?
La, la, la. What are we doing?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is a better movie. This is the thing. All these additions do make it better.
I mean, if this film stopped and they sang Suddenly Seymour, fuck me, it's an Oscar.
Oh, man. I mean, the this is the thing. It's taking big swings. I mean, you know, I would respect it.
Son be a Sith.
Son be a Sith Lord. You have a talent for causing things pain.
Punches
really
Miriam Margulies in the face.
It kicks an otter's head off. Great. And if it was, imagine if like you've got Kylo comes in with his strawberry fondant helmet, takes it off, and now without explanation he's being played by Steve Martin.
Amazing.
I fucking love it.
Then he does a banjo solo.
Yeah, bang, ding, 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 and all the Imperial Guard officers around the table. Da, 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 da,
da, da. Even the one on the ceiling from Monty Python style laughs.
When I went to Alabama with a banjo on my knee. Yeah, the ceiling as well.
Imagine if they'd really just like completely not cared in this and just done little bits, sketches and stuff.
Oh, do you know what? My fiance. This is actually really good continuity. I think there's a really lovely trace, like a line you can trace between these Star Wars podcasts of our friendship developing, John.
I think so.
But also our lives sort of changing and moving on, and you know, our increasing disappointment with the Star Wars films.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting married next month.
Oh, bless you.
As we're recording this, thank you. So I, you know, if we'd recorded this later, I could have said my wife, which would have created a pleasing arc.
Would you want me to paste it in a couple of months?
Yeah, sure. My wife, my wife to be, said when the new Top Gun Maverick film came out, they should have to do a new Hot Shots.
Yes,
like because it should be that every time a Top Gun film comes out, you have to do Hot Shots.
Except and, it would be the opposite story of Maverick because Charlie Sheen looks like fucking shit now.
Yeah, he's not aged as well.
No, and he's very ill as well, isn't he? So
yeah, that would have been a problem. I mean, you can always get a new Topper Harley.
You could.
It would be a shame. It'd be a bit sad.
Tom, we're doing it again. We're not talking about Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker.
But if they had done, you know, Star Wars movie, you know, like epic movie, instead of Rise of Skywalker, I'd be well up for that, you know?
I mean, it couldn't be any least, you know, less funny than any of those epic style movies.
Genuinely, I wish we'd watched superhero movie instead of Rise of Skywalker.
Well, that is superhero movies where a door will open and go, "Hello, I am Iron Man." That is the joke. And then another door open and someone will go, "Hello, I am the Hulk."
Yeah, and then they open a third door and it's Batman having a wang and he goes, "Oh, sorry, wrong movie," and shuts the door. Actually, that's too good.
That's much too good. That would be rejected. Batman opens the door and goes, "Oh, I shouldn't be in here. I should be in the room with all the DC heroes," and he walks in there. That's the joke.
Yeah, and then they're all in there and they go, "Batman," and then
"Hi,
the door
Flash."
Shuts. "Hi, Flash. I'm the Flash," he says, and everyone goes, "Ha ha ha ha!" Very funny.
Yeah.
They fly now. They fly now. It's still better than that.
And Chewie puts down another $10.
A big thing that they do, I think this is J.J. Abrams mimicking Star Wars. Well, I don't remember actually if this is a thing in Star Wars, in the, you know, the original trilogy, but there's this echoing dialogue thing of like, never underestimate a droid, which to me feels like more something you would get in the prequels, like somebody just, but they assume that, and they do it later as well with the, "I know what I have to do, but I don't know if I've got the strength to do it." And you go, the echoes are really hokey because they're too exact and complicated. Never underestimate a droid. What does that mean? Like, it's not a running theme that Leia particularly is fond of droids, and it's not a thing that any other character doesn't trust them.
Empire Strikes The theme of Empire Strikes Back is that everybody fucking hates C-3PO to the point that he gets completely obliterated by a stormtrooper.
Yeah.
So no, that's not a consistent theme in the original
films. No, it's not. But that echoing dialogue thing, is that something that happens a lot? Because I was thinking it sort of feels familiar, but I don't. But it's done really badly in this film,
Lucas famously says it has to be like a poem in rhyme.
So that's they've literally thought we'll do that literally.
Yeah.
Never underestimate a droid. I'm having a flare up with my hemorrhoid.
Yeah.
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 So do it literally.
Yeah.
That's a good strategy.
It's
it would be better. It would still be better. This is the problem. We're being all like ha 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 and silly, but we are writing a better movie than I've just watched.
Definitely. But they get discovered. Sorry, before all that, they fly now. They meet Lando Calrissian. I forgot about that.
Oh yeah, he's there. And I sort of thought, oh, thank God, an interesting old character has come back.
No.
The last one in the bucket.
He hasn't though, has he? Because he's really boring.
He's very boring in this, and
it's good to see him. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, absolutely! I love Billy Dee Williams. He looks a bit tired.
He's very tired.
I think he's having fun, but he's just—it's not like having Harrison Ford back. You know, still, you know, running about and shooting stuff, and you know, he just sort of looks like, oh, I sure. Thanks for asking. You know,
he's not a well man. I've seen him. He needs like two canes to get about.
Oh, does he? Right.
So that's why in this film he's always stationary. I don't mean he's like, you know, like a
I mean, it's
note.
It's a lot better than deep faking someone who's passed away.
It's
but,
true.
You know, it's still, you know, but bless him and it's nice to see him. But it does almost feel like, tick, there's another one.
Well, he says, "Give Leia my love." And she says, "You can give it to her yourself." And he's like, oh, all right. Is that, am I on? Is that good?
Yeah, I'm on a promise, am I?
Is she up for it, is she?
Oh, is she? Know. Yeah, great.
I've wanted to bang that bitch for 40 years.
Just like more of a blaxploitation hero than he ever even was in the original
He's basically
trilogy.
Black Dynamite now, yeah.
Dynamite.
Oh, I love that film. I wish
it's
we could watch that.
It's fucking fantastic.
One of my favourite films of all time.
I think it is. It's one of the best comedy films
I
ever
threw
made.
That shit before I came in the room.
No, John, back to Rise of Skywalker.
Sorry. But watch Black
Dynamite.
I'll
take you back to Grinshaw Pete with his hot-ass coat hangers. Would you like that? if you don't talk about Rise of Skywalker. Anyway, shut the fuck up, Euphoria, says Lando.
God, I love that film.
Shut the fuck up, Ray.
Shush, little girl. There's probably a lot of cats around here with that name.
A lot of dudes have that name. My mama says my dad's called Lando Calrissian. Shut up, little girl. A lot of cats have that name. What the hell is Ochi, by the way? Because they kept mentioning Ochi and I didn't know what it was.
He's a bounty hunter, apparently.
Oh, I thought it was a planet. I don't know.
No, he's a bounty hunter with the big goggles. And he kills Rey's parents. Right. And can't find Rey because his ship... His is the ship you see taking off in The Force Awakens when she's holding on to Simon Pegg and he's going, I wish someone would put me in a good film.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually really good. What the hell's going on? Yeah.
Am I, though? It's been a long time since I've been any good.
Well, I wish I'd like the opportunity to prove it. You know, that's that conversation that happens.
Yeah, I'm very much like Jerry the cat in that I need Tom to be relevant.
What, me?
Well, no.
Oh, Tom the...
Tom Neenan.
Tom the cat. Oh, Tom Neenan. Okay. Do you know what? Now, I'll say this, and I mean this. Mm. I think that if Tom Neenan had the chance to write, a film to showcase Simon Pegg, I think that would go really well and might revitalise his career.
It would go great.
I'm the secret style wishing that into the universe now.
No, that would be wonderful. I'm sure Tom Neenan would like that as well.
Oh, he'd love that, yeah, absolutely.
I bet he's all right. He's on the gravy train.
He's on the old BBC gravy train. Yeah. Well, the Dave Comedy gravy train, you know, but it's a similar train.
He's having a lovely time, and he'll be listening to this, so hello, Tom.
Hello, Tom. We love you, you know.
We do. More than you'll ever know.
More than you'll ever know.
Ochi is a bounty hunter who had this mysterious dagger. Again, more bullshit.
More bullshit. The strangest thing in the Star Wars universe, a knife that isn't made of lasers.
What the fuck is... Well, yeah, exactly. Someone's watched The Goonies and gone, we need this knife that matches up perfectly to a thing that might shift in
this
the
is
water.
The, we've got the Wayfinder. This is the shit stabber. And Ochi takes his goggles off and it's Pop underneath, isn't it? That's amazing. Who Ochi was all along. Oh.
How many Knights of Ren?
How many Knights of... Nine Knights of Ren. Put some of those fucking chimps in the suit. They do a better job.
Oh, God.
They'll be more exciting.
They fall into some sort of weird quicksand that doesn't... It's the weirdest quicksand because it doesn't sink and kill them. It makes them fall into a cave underneath.
Yeah. It just another sort of totally manufactured moment of jeopardy.
Well,
to
talking of which,
later,
because that's when Finn says, "Rey, there's something I've always needed to tell you."
Yeah,
and
do we ever find out what that is?
No. Cool. Poe even asks him later, and he's like, "Oh, I'll tell you later." He never does.
Mm-hmm. Around this point, don't we have Rey slicing the wing off of Kylo Ren's fighter, which is the first cool
thing
that's
coming
up. Happened?
That's coming up.
That's later, okay.
That's coming up, so you better get the party started. Anyway.
When the Knights of Ren turned up on that cliff edge looking ponderous, I just thought, oh, here they come, the right Knights of Ren. Back streets, back. All right! I mean, we are writing the most perfect Star Wars movie.
I was expecting one of them to start playing the solo to November Rain. Because there's a helicopter going right round them, isn't there? So.
That's true, yeah. That would be good.
Slash ruining... that's the thing about November Rain that bothers me, is Axl Rose's wedding, right, is ruined. Because it rains. Yes. Someone falls through the cake. Slash is like, well, fuck this, I'm going to go outside and play my guitar.
Yeah, and then just as Slash is doing that in on the desert planet, then Brian May comes out and starts playing God Save the Queen.
On top of the castle, yeah.
On top of the castle, yeah.
You know, he directed the music video to November Rain.
Who?
Ridley Scott.
Really?
Yeah.
That's how he started, wasn't it? That's quite a sort of... That began a tradition.
He did.
And that then is quite nicely tying in with Alien 3, right? Mm. Because, what's his bloody name? Fincher. He started out doing music videos
He did, indeed.
There you go.
I remember watching an arena documentary about Ridley Scott, and it was a great little intro. It was a loaf of Hovis.
Yeah.
And then the alien chest burster comes out the top of it.
Nice.
I thought, that's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, that is fun.
Well done, Ridley Scott.
You've made some really, really great films.
And some terrible ones as well, balance.
Well, that's right. Mm. I was going to ask you, John, would you rather watch Rise of Skywalker again or Prometheus?
Prometheus.
You think so?
I think, and I'm going to get cancelled for this.
Here we go. Big takes.
I think Prometheus has aged quite well.
Okay. Well, maybe I should watch it again. I remember enjoying the ride of it and then walking away from it and thinking, that's all bollocks.
I hated it when I first saw it, but I watched it again recently and I really enjoyed it.
Alien Covenant was a weird one. I didn't love that either. I, you know, I was, yeah, but also I think I feel like there was a collective sort of in the cinema when it reveals that actually this is a sequel to Prometheus.
Yeah.
It felt all the trailers were going, nah, it's what you want. It's characters that you can care about, invest in, and they're going to face some aliens on a planet. Oh, just you wait. It's back to the good times. Then David the Android. Oh, fuck. Oh,
fucking hell. It's like when Mike and Bernie Winters came out. You're like, oh, there's two of them.
There's so many Winters. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, Rise of Skywalker. So they're in the cave and that big sort of basilisk comes out.
Yep.
There's a nice joke here that I really enjoy, by the way. It's when Rey turns on her lightsaber for light because it's dark, and Poe turns on his torch and it does a beam like a lightsaber.
Tink.
It's quite a nice little visual joke.
Yeah, that's all right, yeah.
Which I'm guessing someone else thought of.
Yeah. Maybe on the day.
So the snake's all like that lion with the paw, like, oh, I'm really hurt. Oh,
yeah. Oh no, please. Yeah.
And Rey heals him, and he's like, oh, you can go now. And also they find Orchie's dead skeleton.
Yeah.
Not his live one.
It, with a pot noodle in his lap.
Yeah.
And his flies open.
Yeah.
Luckily, he's all rotted away, so you can't see what was beneath those flies.
Oh.
But he still gets up and he says, how many Maverick bars?
Oh, Paul, I thought you were a Mara Queen.
American? Yeah, American.
Yeah, American.
Yeah, Oscar Isaac, the actor.
Oscar Isaac.
That's right.
I've seen you in
Inside the Llewellyn Davis.
Davis, yeah.
But very moving story.
You're playing the beautiful guitar.
Beautiful guitar.
Yeah.
I am hot for you, Oscar Isaac. Who wouldn't be? Gorgeous man.
Very gorgeous man. And I saw an interview with Oscar Isaac recently, and they said to him, would you do another Star Wars? And he was like, oh, no. And then he went, actually, if I need another house, yes. I think.
Have you seen The Rise of Skywalker, Oscar Isaac? Mm. No, but I've seen the house it bought.
And it's very nice. By all accounts, it's a terrible film.
By all accounts.
But the theme of this film with every actor, by the way, is very much checked out.
Yeah, ready for
dead
bed
behind now. The eyes.
That's right. Yeah, ready to go. Mm. Raise Jesus now, then.
Yes,
she can heal people.
This is a thing now that
that's
the Force...
one of the many. That and the teleportation thing are two things that I think they immediately ring as just like that doesn't work. Like
no,
you don't believe it, and you just go. It makes the Force less interesting, not more interesting.
Well, it does, because when you think about the thing that made Anakin evil in the first place was being able to bring people back from the dead, and now we're just doing it willy nilly.
Yeah, now you can. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, ridiculous.
So Rey, they get out of the snake cave, as it were.
Yep.
They find the dagger, but C-3PO can't read the inscription because it's written in Sith.
Yep.
I can't read Sith. It's against my programming. That and Bernard Manning jokes.
I would read it to you, but there's a really awful joke about curry houses here I'm not prepared to say. No, say it. Say it. The fate of the universe hangs in the balance. Oh. I can't stress enough. This really isn't all right.
We're going to have to take this to Jim Davidson.
He's fucking chomping at the bit to read it out loud. Oh. Sith Lord Darth Davidson is, you know, sitting in his, Surrey mansion.
He'd be like Darth Chalky, wouldn't he? It'd be awful.
Darth Chalky. Oh, God. Yeah.
Till forever, tell me the bad times are clean washed away. Please understand that it's still strange and frightening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. do more with Viator.